Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me on my left for today's very special episode of TCCP is none other than Hampshire and Scotland seam sensation, Brad Wheel. So Brad, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. How's your day been so far, mate?
Yeah, been a good one. Driven down from London, obviously being with the London Spirit the last couple of weeks, so that's been a pretty good experience. And we just got a couple of days to sort of chill out now. Bit of time off in the middle of the tournament between fixtures, so just a bit of downtime, get a bit of training done. But yeah, otherwise all good.
Well, that is very, very good to hear, Brad. Nice to see the weather as well down south. I said it before we started recording, it looks absolutely beautiful down south, not so much here in the West Midlands. I'm going to be honest, we've got a lot of rain and you know, showers and thunderstorms even reported for the next few days. But yeah, hopefully next week, it looks like that picturesque scene down south. But Brad, we aren't here to talk about the weather. We are, of course, here to talk about cricket and in particular, your county cricket journey. So just for the listeners out there, today I'm going to be talking to Brad about his earliest cricketing memories. A heavy, heavy part of the discussion will be about Hampshire County Cricket Club. And then we will wrap up today's episode with a classic round of TCCP teammates. But Brad, before we get into all of that good stuff then, let's go right back to the origin of the Brad Wheel cricketing journey. What were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching the game?
Yeah, I remember as a youngster, so obviously I was brought up in Durban, South Africa. So my cricket journey would have started when I played school cricket back then. That was obviously a big part of the development. But I remember playing cricket with my next door neighbour, that he's literally the one who taught me how to play cricket. And probably I owe a lot of where I am today because of what happened then. Just the love for the game and the way we used to play in the backyard and just sort of love every second of it. That was where the love of the game first began, I think. So yeah, just sort of started from there, went up through the school cricket, which is obviously, as you know, very strong in South Africa. And that's where all your good young players would come through. But yeah, it's been an exciting journey. And then obviously growing up watching South Africa play in Durban was obviously great. I remember going to watch Sean Pollock and Jacques Callis play. I was there for his last test, where he scored a double hundred, I think. It was just incredible. So, I mean, those are the earliest memories, watching Polly steam and from the pavilion end.
Incredible memories. Absolutely incredible. Sean Pollock, of course, played for my county of Warwickshire. Absolute legend here in the West Midlands. And of course, Jacques Callis. When he was younger, when he was kind of, you know, first progressing into the world of international cricket, he played for Middlesex alongside David Nash, funnily enough, a former guest of ours. So two massive names, two absolute legends of South African cricket. And as you said, Brad, the school system in South Africa is very strong, but just for the listeners out there who don't quite know the ins and outs of South African cricket, what is the South African cricket culture like?
Yeah, well, obviously, in terms of that, in terms of school cricket and the way people are developed as youngsters, I said there's not much of a club system, especially when I was from Durban. So all your young cricketers are going to start from school, and there's a big push for school sports. So, I mean, you're playing with your mates, you're having a good time, but still learning and playing a really good standard. And that's sort of where you get pushed through and noticed from there, more so than your club teams. Obviously, it's great to play club stuff when you can. But in terms of younger development stuff, it would all come through schools, and you'd sort of work your way up into your provincial teams from there. So there's good opportunity to be had, because obviously there's hundreds of schools around, and all the schools would have very good cricket sides, very good coaching. So, I mean, I had Graham Ford coaching me when I was under 13. He came in, he was my first team coach. So, I mean, you've got unbelievable coaching staff. So, it's no wonder that you're going to get a lot of good young cricketers coming through the system. It's just whether they can hang on to them, I guess.
100%. Yeah, it has been, an issue, actually, with regards to South African cricket. A lot of players moving from the country to come here. Of course, we had the Colpack system, which no longer exists due to the UK's exit from the European Union. But then you've also got Australia, New Zealand, some are now going to America as well. Rusty Tehron, for example, who used to play for South Africa, and Dane Peat have also gone to the USA. So it is interesting, and hopefully, fingers crossed for South African listeners out there, more players do stay in the country itself. But we've mentioned already, Brad, two massive names, and they are absolutely ginormous They really are in Sean Pollock and Jack Callis, two titans of the game of cricket. In terms of your early days in the world of cricket, who did you look up to per se? Who were your cricketing idols in those formative years?
Well, probably Polly, definitely. As I obviously would have watched him growing up, being able to go to the ground and watch him play was obviously incredible and probably something I didn't appreciate as much as I should have when I was that young, as you do. And always loved seam bowling, so Brett Lee was my favourite. And sort of a bit of a fluke, but I've ended up with the same number as him. Not intentionally, but it's not the end of the world. But guys like that, obviously, seeing Dale Steyn come through when I was a youngster, watching the likes of these guys bowl, was incredible. I mean, being very fortunate, obviously, there was an RPL which was held in South Africa a good few years ago. I remember going to watch there, obviously seeing unbelievable talent. You've got the best players in the world and playing in a franchise tournament on your backyard, basically. So, yeah, it's just been looking up to those guys since I was a youngster. I've been really lucky to have watched those guys play.
Well, yes, some massive names in there. And that is actually pretty cool. I must admit, there's a little bit of envy on my behalf there. You got to watch the IPL. That's in 2009. We've had Ruller van der Merwe actually on the podcast to discuss that tournament. What a great, great tournament it was as well. My team, RCB, finished as the finalists. But, yeah, that's another story for another podcast, not here on TCCP. But Brad, in terms of your journey as a cricketer, I know that for a South African, of course, this is pretty commonplace. But why did you become a seam bowler? Because in Durban itself, when we look at Kingsmead, I know it's not exactly the MA Chidambaram in Chennai by any means, but it is a little bit more spin conducive compared to the Wanderers or Newlands, for example. Why did you go into seam bowling as a discipline? Why isn't Brad Wheel a spinner or a specialist batsman?
Probably because I couldn't bat when I started off. No, but I think that goes back to when I started playing literally in the backyard as a 5-6-year-old. I remember me and my best mate used to play for hours out there in the driveway, and he was the one always batting and I was the one always bowling. So I think it sort of just developed from that, and it was something I thought, well, as I started playing in school cricket and actually playing games against other teams, realized it was something that I could actually be pretty decent at and started working on that. So just sort of developed it through there. I think it wasn't a choice per se that I would have thought about, just something that sort of happened the way it does sometimes, I guess.
Fair enough. And of course, it has obviously paid off. But what is your favourite part of seam bowling, Brad? Because here on TCCP, we always liken it to the romantic discipline of cricket. It's the one, we've already mentioned some massive names. Dale Steyn, for example, Binger himself, Brett Lee, Sean Tate, the Wild Thing, Shoaib Akhtar. There are so many legendary seamers who have graced the wonderful game over the years. What was your favourite aspect of seam bowling as an art form?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. If you were to go watch a game of cricket, you want to see, obviously nowadays people want to see fours, sixes, boundaries, action. But it's something that I've always been interested in. You go to the cricket and you want to watch someone bowl quick. So I said the likes of watching those legends play when I was a youngster. You turn up on the ground and they're bowling the speed of light from the sidelines, what it looks like. I think that sort of aspect where people sit back and go like, wow, that's something cool. And I'm sure other people, like spinners, might do that with other spinners. But I think growing up, that's just the way I saw it. It was just, I want to bowl quick because these guys can do it and it looks amazing. And I think that's a part that I really enjoy of it, is that, I mean, you're playing in all these games in front of crowds and all the young lads coming to watch and whatever, young girls and guys, and they look up to you obviously, and you want to impress them. So if they come to the ground, they're seeing good quality fast bowling. That's something that probably makes you want to keep doing it and get better at it, I guess.
I'll tell you what, Brad, I really like that answer. I really do. And it's funny you mentioned about the spin, because, well, I call myself a spinner. I proclaim myself as an off spinner. Whether or not that's factually accurate, maybe a slow bowler per se, maybe not exactly the next Mutimba or Lithurum, but I agree. When you are really into one of the disciplines in cricket, you really do keep an eye out in particular on that particular discipline. I love watching spin bowling. For you, it's seam bowling. And we are very, very privileged at the moment to have some fantastic bowlers in the world of cricket. And I suppose, Brad, that does actually bring me nicely onto my next question before we talk about county cricket in particular. Who do you say is your favourite bowler on the planet right now? It can be county cricket, international. Who really stands out to you in the world of bowling?
It'd be hard not to say Kyle Abbott, because obviously I've played with him a lot over the last couple of years and he's a gun. I mean, I don't think that needs much more said about it. But yeah, I've enjoyed him. Obviously, a lot of the Indian guys coming through, I enjoy. Bumrah, I think, is amazing. The way they have to find a way on flat wickets and just be good. Because I think there's obviously a difference between being good when it's seaming around and swinging around, but doing it when there's nothing going on and being able to put good pace on the ball, move it around still. I think that's something that I really look up to, I guess.
Fair enough. I mean, I cannot argue with that choice of Kyle Abbott. Funnily enough that you mention him, today in the Royal London One Day Cup game against Worcestershire, he took a fiver. So, yeah, the guy is prolific with a capital P. Yeah, no surprise at all. I'm not surprised either. The guy's an absolute gun. Used to play for South Africa, came here, of course, has played for Hampshire for a number of years now. And every single year, red ball cricket, white ball cricket, he's always in the wickets column. He's an absolute nightmare to face. And yeah, I'm not looking forward to our game against Hampshire in Super September with Kyle Abbott. Keith is welcoming back yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness me. That's going to be a painful watch. If you three get the rhythm going. But before we get on to 2021, of course, Brad, we have to go back to the origin of your county cricket journey, I suppose, because so far our conversation has been very much South Africa orientated in terms of Durban, in terms of cricketers you look up to. But how did the initial move to the UK actually materialise in the first place? How did you go from Durban to the UK?
Yeah, it was one of those things. I was obviously very fortunate that I just happened to be sort of right place, right time. So I'd done fairly well in my school cricket career, got selected to play provincial under 19s. We went to the Coca-Cola week in Pretoria, which is obviously where the provinces come together and they play against each other in a tournament for the week. So I did quite well there. And I'd always said that I wanted to go and play cricket in the UK. Obviously, mum being from Scotland and my family being Scottish, I had the opportunity to do so and sort of just got my name out there a bit, I guess, from doing well in that tournament where Dale Benkenstein, who was Hampshire coach at the time, sort of noticed me, I guess you could say. And I think he was still maybe a batting consultant with the South African team at the time. So I'd gone to bowl to them in the nets just as a net bowler to the Safa lads. And he was there, liked what he saw and said, come over to Hampshire. I know you want to go over to the UK and play cricket. Come over on a development contract, see how you go, play some second team cricket. And it just sort of escalated from there, I guess. It was very, very last minute, something that just happened. I said, right place, right time. And then again, did okay. Did quite well in the twos to start my first few games. Didn't have a clue what I was doing, just trying to bowl as quick as I could, as you do as an 18-year-old fresh off the plane. We had a couple injuries in the first team going into the first few months of the Champo season, and then I got a game. So I was really, really lucky to be where I am. But yeah, quite an exciting story.
Absolutely, yeah. Whistle stop, shall we say. Very, very fast journey. I mean, to go from, well, I suppose from playing cricket in South Africa to making your championship debut in a very, very short space of time must have been very, very exciting. But we'll get to that in due course, Brad, because just before we talk about your debut, I want to know your first impressions of Hampshire as a county. What did you make of the county itself and Southampton as a city?
Yeah, well, obviously, arriving here, I've been to the UK before. I've spent quite a bit of time here and around Scotland and London, whatever, obviously, but never been down south. So I loved it from the start. I said fresh off the plane, didn't have anything, just my cricket bag, my boots and some clothes. Not much else. Chucked down, there's a cottage down behind the ground, which I was in. No one else was there, so I didn't know anyone. So it was a bit daunting. But obviously, unbelievable ground. You drive in there and it's a spectacle of a stadium. You've got the nursery ground, the facilities there are just incredible. The hotel was still being built at the time, so it wasn't quite where it is at the moment. Yeah, it was just good. And then obviously getting to meet everyone, I was, again, pretty lucky. On a development contract, they said, right, we'll take you to Barbados on the pre-season tour, have a look at you. So I mean, that was the first time I'd actually met anyone in the team, really. I think we'd done maybe one or two indoor sessions before going to Barbados. Played some games there, got to know the boys, and obviously loved it straight away. It's been a great, great team environment. Obviously, the coaching staff has been good. Bengt's in charge at that time. I enjoyed, because obviously, being South African, he sort of knew my situation, how I'd feel coming over as a youngster, sort of not really knowing anyone and never being in a professional cricket environment before. So they were really good to me and sort of looked after me. Obviously, we had good senior players, Sean Irvan, Jimmy Adams, a lot of guys that sort of just looked after me and made sure I was good. So I loved it from the moment I've got here.
Well, I'll tell you what, Brad, that is going to be music to the ears of any Hampshire fan tuning into today's podcast. It really is. That is a lovely, lovely start to your life as a Hampshire player. And I suppose in terms of, you know, that initial move itself, did you find it really difficult to adapt to English, you know, conditions in terms of your cricket? Because they are different to South Africa. Let's face it, South Africa, a lot drier, you know, even more seem conducive here, in particular for hit the deck fast bowlers. But how did you actually acclimatise and adapt to conditions here in the UK?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it was tough, obviously, because never bowled with a Duke's ball before. You use kookaburras in South Africa, so that was something new. Hadn't played on pitches like you do here, obviously. And it was just something, obviously, a bit of trial and error. I had to sort of figure it out for myself, obviously being guarded by the coaches and other senior players around me. But just, it's sort of a trial and error. So you figure it out and you think, right, I know for a fact that my first few games I bowled way too short, but I thought I was doing really well because I wasn't going for many runs. But turns out I was bowling halfway down and couldn't get hit off the square. So, I mean, you learn these things as you go through. I was again, quite lucky that my provincial coach in South Africa, under-19s, he drummed into me before that week tournament where I did quite well, that I needed to bowl a fuller length, which is probably something more close to what you'd call an English length, which I think helped me quite a lot because that was then more natural. My natural length before would have been more back of a length, which is more acceptable, I guess, when you're playing on harder, quicker wickets in South Africa. But just that sort of just getting it up there, Eddie said, my natural length being that back of a length, I just had to find a way to get it up there and get batters playing it more, especially playing on good wickets against good batters, which I hadn't done before.
Interesting. Very, very interesting, Brad. I can imagine that is quite difficult, actually, isn't it? Because for the majority of your life up until that point, as you said, bowling with a kookaburra, bowling that shorter length, because obviously there's a lot more carry on South African surfaces, and then you've got to change pretty much your entire approach to bowling. And we have to mention this, it is a debate that myself and Jojo isn't here today, unfortunately, on the podcast, but kookaburra or Duke's ball, which one do you prefer and why, Brad?
Well, it depends if you're talking red ball, white ball. All day cricket, first class cricket, definitely a Duke. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the bowler, I'm going to be biased because it's got a bigger seam, probably swings a bit more. So I'll use a Duke every day of the week. Maybe my 10th first class game, I remember I think it was against Worcester at the Aegeus Bowl, and all of a sudden the ball just started swinging way too much and I had no idea how to control it. And that was, again, another massive learning curve because I just thought, well, it's swinging. This looks great. I'm not going for any runs. Turns out no one had played at the ball for about 10 overs, so the coaches weren't too happy. But that's something I had to figure out and learn how to, you learn how to control the swing and make batters play more.
Oh, 100%. But that comes with time, doesn't it? You build that up through match day experience, I suppose. And that was in your 10th first class game. I mean, very, very early days, shall we say, Brad? Very, very early indeed. But I want to just talk slightly earlier than that. I want to talk about your debut, Brad, because 2015 County Championship, Division 1. Division 1 in itself, massive. Absolutely huge cricketing league in terms of global presence and stature. What do you remember from that debut for Hampshire? How proud of a moment was that for you personally?
Yeah, obviously it was amazing. I said, obviously being a youngster, you're very naive to what's going on around you and you maybe don't understand how big of a moment it is. So I just turned up. Obviously I was told I was playing, I think that morning. So very excited to be a part of it, playing against and with very good players. Obviously I was happy to be playing at the GS Bowl home ground, first home game. I think it was the first time I played on the main ground before any played on the nursery. Again, just remember charging in, trying to roll as quick as I could. I don't remember much. I think we got pumped for most of my first few games, which is, I think, the way most of that season went. Because obviously Hampshire had just come up from Div 2, winning Div 2 the year before. So it was probably something new to quite a lot of us. Obviously, I think Robson was first wicket, so that was quite nice. I'm not sure if I got a wicket for the rest of the game. Can't remember. Yeah, just loved it. Just loved being there, a part of the moment, trying to bowl as quick as I could. That was pretty much it.
Fair enough, Brad. You were spot on, though. Sam Robson, first wicket at the time, playing for England as well, wasn't he? I believe 2015. So not a bad scalp to have under your belt as your first championship wicket. Do you know how many runs you scored as well in that game? I've got that in front of me right now.
No idea. Probably not many.
If I said you faced 26 balls, how many runs do you think you got?
Not more than 5.
Correct. You got 3 not out.
Sounds about right.
Hey, fair enough. Tail enders Union. We're not there to score the runs, are we? I mean,
Aidy Brewer, our current coach, just keeps saying I'm stubborn with the bat. And she said, you just be stubborn. You just stay there as long as you can and be stubborn. So that's my job. I'm going to be there for the other lads and they can score as many as they want.
Exactly. I mean, in a way, it's quite nice, isn't it, as a tail ender, because there isn't any pressure, is there, in terms of the batting?
Well, I mean, there is to an extent. I remember a couple of years ago playing against Yorkshire. Gareth Bergh was on 99 on the other end. And I happened to nick a Joe Root away swinger. So that didn't go down too well. So there was a bit of pressure there.
Oh. Yeah, okay, fair enough in that situation. Oh, I mean, that must be horrible. I remember 2018, funnily enough, Mornay Morkel, when he got out, and Temba Bavuma, I think, was on 95. Oh, yeah. It is killer, isn't it? That is the one thing you don't want as a tail ender.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just thinking, get through this over. He'll get it the next over, and then if I get out, it's fine. It's not the end of the world. And then nick one to first slip.
Oh, it's painful, isn't it? The world of tail enders, eh? If only we could bat. And I certainly can't bat. I'm absolutely dreadful. I'm averaging about 11 in a very, very low league. So that just says it about my batting caliber.
It's better than nothing.
It is. That is a good point, in fact. I'm not walking wicket just yet. Fair enough. But in terms of that debut, Brad, I suppose for you, would you say that's been your proudest moment in a Hampshire shirt so far? Or for you, is there another one which really takes the top spot for you? Would you say it was the debut, or has something else surpassed that in the years that have followed?
Yeah, obviously that was a massive moment in my Hampshire career and something that I'll cherish for the rest of my life. There's been great moments along the way. Obviously, when we won the 50-over comp, I unfortunately didn't play because I was injured, but just being around that squad, even though I wasn't playing, that feeling of winning a first trophy with the team was something special. So there's moments like that along the way that you can't replace, I guess. This year, we've obviously had a pretty good run of games, and it's nice to be in a winning team that knows how to get wins and sort of get some momentum and on a roll. So there's many, many good moments. Haven't played a huge amount of T20 cricket, but one comes to mind at Sussex last over, which is obviously a nice moment for me. But yeah, it's just one of a few amazing moments at the club.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, Brad, because I wanted to talk about that actually, because that was an absolutely crazy game of cricket down in Hove, 2016 T20 Blast. Could you just take us through what happened on that night? For those who don't know the background behind this, I think you were defending 5 runs in the final over, if I'm not mistaken, and you conceded just 3 with some ridiculous death bowling. Brad, how was that night for you, and what can you remember from that?
It was a bit of a blur, to be honest. But incredible. I said, obviously, you've got amazing players around you. I had Shahid Afridi, Sean Irvine, guys who have been there and done that and sort of experienced those sort of games before. And it was one of those. I think we obviously batted first, didn't score enough. But just didn't score enough runs. And probably one that they should have knocked off pretty easily, I think. But we bowled well from the whole way through, really. And I think all we'd said was, let's just take this as deep as we can. Because, I mean, everyone who watches cricket knows that things happen at the back end of games. If there's still a chance, there's something can happen. And that was just what we'd sort of said to ourselves throughout that game. And I said, obviously, chuck the ball for that last over. And I thought, well, I'm going to have to be flipping good here if we get through this. But I said, literally, you've got Afridi next to you, helping you out every other ball, which was amazing. And sort of just helping you calm the nerves, because as a youngster, you're charging and not really sure what you're doing, still trying to learn your game. So it was an exciting moment and something I won't forget.
I'm glad that you haven't, because it was an absolutely crazy game of cricket. It's funny, I was doing the prep for today's podcast, and that was one of the first things that I look back on. And I rewatched the highlights, because some of those Yorkers at the death to the likes of Ross Taylor were absolutely sensational. They really were.
Sort of a perfect storm. Obviously, the ball was reversing nicely down the hill. Just good rhythm. You have those days where some days you feel really good, some days you don't as a bowler. And it was just one of those days where sort of everything clicked and went our way.
Well, you know, you say about that, about sometimes it clicks, sometimes it doesn't. I think that is, you know, a lot more prevalent in white ball cricket, because we've had this conversation so many times on the podcast. You can bowl really well one day and go for 40-odd runs and get no wickets, and then you can bowl some absolute pies and get two or three wickets in a game. Brad, for you, how do you maintain that even keel with your approach to cricket? How do you maintain that level-headed mindset, personally? Yeah,
it's just one of those things. I think you've just got to accept that that's a part of the game as a bowler. As you say, some days you feel like you bowled the best you've ever bowled and you laugh and get panned and go 10 and over. So it's just accepting that and just backing that what you're doing is right. And obviously, you've got to have your plans, and all you can do is execute to your plans. I think as long as you're doing that, you can turn around and say, listen, I've tried my best. I've done what I think is best and what I thought I was doing right. And some days that just doesn't work out. I think that's just the nature of the beast, especially with T20 cricket, 50-over cricket sometimes. Four-day cricket is a bit different, obviously, because you've got more time to sort of, it's more of a patience game, whereas I think there's a lot more luck involved in T20 and 50-over cricket.
100%. Yeah, there is. It can be very, very erratic and unpredictable, can't it? The T20 arena, it certainly can. I mean, it's happened so many times over the years where a bowler you think is bowling absolutely brilliantly, and then they just get carted for like 10, 12 runs and over. It's absolutely crazy. Brad, to you, does that ever, I don't know, ever get the better of you though? In terms of, let's say you do have a bad performance. Let's say that, I don't know, you went at 11, 12, maybe even 13 runs and over in a game. Do you ever let that get you? Or again, are you pretty good from bouncing back from that disappointment?
I'd like to think I'm pretty good, but obviously I think it's hard not to look back at those and say, well, I should have done this different or that different. So it can be tough. But then again, I said, we're in a good environment now where we've got good teammates around us, where everyone can be sort of honest with each other and say, if you don't think someone was up to standard, you can let them know, but obviously within reason. So that sort of helped, because, you know, even if you've had a day like that, but you feel like you've done well and someone pats you on the back and said, unlucky mate, I thought you were really good today, just wasn't your day. I think that helps a lot. So as I said, it's one of those things, you'd like to think that you're pretty good and move on, especially during T20 season. Obviously the games come thick and fast, so you've just got to sort of get back on the horse and keep going. Try not to think about it by the time you get to the next game.
I think that's some pretty sound advice, to be honest, Brad, for any young seamers out there. Definitely. I mean, it's not always going to be your day, but I suppose when it is, it makes it that much sweeter, doesn't it? For nights like 2016.
A few more of those would be good.
Oh, who knows, Brad? Who knows? I mean, 2021.
Yeah, we'll wait and see.
We will wait and see, indeed. We'll have to wait and see. But Brad, for you, you mentioned beforehand as well, fast forwarding a little bit from 2016. Let's go on to 2018, because that was a desperately unlucky season for yourself as a cricketer, because you had injury, and then there was another injury the following season, wasn't there, in 2019?
Yeah.
Would you say that was your most difficult / toughest moment in a Hampshire shirt so far, getting over those injuries and getting back into the flow of professional cricket?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things. So I think it's sort of accepted to an extent that young fast bowlers, there's a risk that you're going to get injuries, bowling injuries. So I had stress fracture in my back. It's just one of those things that you feel like you can't do a huge amount about. As you see, there's a lot of guys that it happens to. But it's tough, because you sort of, when you're out of the game for that long, you feel like you've lost touch with it a bit. You don't feel a part of the squad as much, because you're not traveling with the team. You're not there. You can go into the change room and support the boys, but it's not quite the same. So it can be tough, and you sort of just got to find a way to get through that. I mean, when you're going in 8-9 months every week, rehabbing, doing the same stuff over and over again, building up to the season that's still another few months away after a winter, it can be tough, because you sort of lose sight of what the end goal is. So yeah, obviously really tough. But then again, I've been lucky that I've had good teammates around me, good support staff, sort of looked after me throughout the way. And obviously I've been lucky that Hampshire backed me through those injuries, because it was pretty much 2 full years of not playing cricket. But just knowing that they still back me, and that when I'm fit and ready to go, I'll get my opportunities. So that was always promising.
Well, that is fantastic to hear. It really is a good support network then down on the South Coast for yourself, Brad. And it is desperately unlucky, isn't it? And it's really, really tough. I'm going to be honest, this is from a fan's perspective now. When you do see a cricketer who's doing well who's, you know, progressing, evolving, developing their game really well. I think of Ollie Stone, for example, for Warwickshire at the moment. And then there's an injury and it just curtails all of that progress. And you almost have to start almost from, not necessarily from scratch, but it sets you back a few paces, doesn't it? From where you were beforehand.
That game time, that experience, everything that you would have had throughout those couple of years of injuries, you've then got to catch up on again. And obviously when you're back and fully fit, I think it's just sort of expected that you're going to be where you were before, if not better. So there's pressure on straight away. You've got to perform. So in that sort of sense, it can be difficult. But again, I've been pretty lucky with my journey after that, and touch wood, it's been pretty good since then.
It certainly has. And we will have to discuss 2021 in due course, because your name has popped up quite a few times, shall we say, on both the Championship and the T20 wrap-up shows here on TCCP. But Brad, we mentioned there about injuries, and I just wanted to know this for you personally. Where did the inner steel, the inner fortitude, the motivation come from to come back from those injuries? Because stress fractures in particular are an absolute nightmare. They're one of the worst injuries you can have as a seam bowler. They can set your pace back. They can set your journey back, as we said, by a few months, if not a few years. How did you actually get over those injuries and get back into the swing of things at Hampshire?
I said it's obviously not easy, but again, I've been so lucky that I've had good support around me from Hampshire. My family, my mates have sort of backed me through it. But then again, you just sort of want to be out there. So after sort of having a taste for a couple of years and experiencing what it can be like when you're up top and you're doing well, it's obviously incredible and you want to perform to the best level that you can. So that's sort of the motivation that gets you through, being able to think about, and this time next year, I could be playing in front of a packed house, showing people what I do, showing off, and sort of making a name for myself. And I think that's the exciting thing. That's what gets you going. Sort of the want to not prove people wrong, but show people what you can do. That definitely did get me through it a lot, I think.
Fair enough, Brad. I like that answer. I really, really do like that answer. And in 2021, mate, I think it's safe to say that you've done exactly that, because we have to talk about this season. It's not only been a very, very good season for Hampshire, reaching Division One in Super September, but for yourself, mate, it's been an absolutely stellar season so far. I believe you're the third leading wicket taker at Hampshire this season with 25 wickets. Not bad at all. Always, this is the thing that's I've mentioned quite a few times on the wrap-up shows. There seems to be a lull at Hampshire. When Abbott's, Abbas or Barker aren't getting wickets, your name seems to just pop up instantly in the scorecard, in the wickets column. It's really, really quite daunting as an opposition fan with regards to Hampshire's bowling this season. For you personally, Brad, how would you describe your 2021 season so far? How would you actually go about putting it into words, per se?
I've obviously enjoyed playing it. I think that's the main part of it, but it's been good. I mean, obviously, I've been happy to be injury-free so far and just playing cricket. And I think that's something I say at the beginning of a season. I just want to play a season where I can show people what I can do, really. And obviously, from the get-go, I knew it was going to be tough to get into the team in the first place, because you've got, as you know, Abbott, Abbas, Barker, those are three world-class seamers that I've got to make the team with. So it's been good motivation. Obviously, there's good bowlers behind me too. So you've just got to really put your hand up there and show people what you can do. But yeah, it's obviously just been nice to be playing cricket again, consistently getting good performances in. And I'm just happy that I've been able to do so for the team, really.
Well, that is fantastic to hear, Brad. It really is. And I'll tell you what, it's good to see you back taking wickets. It really is, in particular in red ball cricket. As I said, there's almost some militaristic precision in terms of the way Hampshire have just been tearing teams apart. And you've been an integral part of that seam battery this season so far. And this is something, again, I was going to say we mentioned it on the podcast. Joe doesn't. He doesn't necessarily like my analogy, but I liken Hampshire, in terms of the seam department, to the New Zealand of English county cricket, right? Hear me out on this one, listeners. Sure. In terms of, you've got two forefront swing bowlers in Mohammed Abbas and Keith Barker, funny enough, a right-hander and a left-hander, a bit like Trent Bolt, Tim Southee. You've got the enforcer, in this case, that is Carl Abbott, the man who just comes in, short, sharp, quick, intimidating bowler, comes in and gets wickets for fun. And then, Brad, again, whether or not you would see this comparison, I've compared you to the Carl Jameson of Hampshire in terms of just coming in, you know, hitting the deck hard, getting wickets, getting that breakthrough. And then quite literally, you've got Colin de Grandhomme. So he played for both teams, of course. So personally, I think that was a decent analogy. Some people may see that as hyperbole, but for you personally, Brad, what is it like to bowl with those four international quality seamers?
Well, it's obviously unbelievable and tough to follow, to be honest, because, I mean, if you're an opposition team looking at us, you're going, right, we've got to get through Abbott, we've got to get through Abbas, we've got to get through Barker, and then you've got to score runs somewhere because these guys are averaging 20. I think Abbas was going at just over 2 and over. It's not going for runs. I mean, teams have to look to score somewhere. So I'm thinking, right, well, they're going to look at me and think, right, we can score some runs here. So it'd be tough in that sense. But then in good, because, I mean, we've obviously had games where I haven't really been needed to bowl that much. And by the time I do get on to have a bowl, there's a few wickets down and sort of getting a crack at the middle to lower order. So it's been exciting, obviously, unbelievable to work behind and with those guys and just watch them do their thing, really. I mean, you're watching Abbott and Abbas open the bowling. It's ridiculous. So there's me thinking, well, I'm going to have to follow this up and be just as good as these lads. Otherwise, someone else is going to do it.
Exactly. And I'll tell you what, I mean, there are a couple of good young seamers, funnily enough, at Hampshire. Think of Scott Curry, for example, and John Turner, in fact, I think he got 3 wickets today as well. So there is a real seam battery, a seam production line in Hampshire. And as I said, it is really, really quite intimidating. And it's not just seamers. I think to your new signing, Nick Gubbins taking a 4 for the other day as well. I mean, some decent bowlers down on the South Coast, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a good signing for us so far. He's obviously scored some runs in the champ, scored some runs in the 50 over and taken wickets. I don't know what more you can ask for, really. So, yeah, I mean, we've obviously got a nice squad at the moment where I think we feel like we've got most bases covered. You've got a good bowling lineup. Obviously, you've got deep, good seamers, swing bowlers, seamers, quick bowlers, guys who maybe aren't as quick. You've got gun spinners, Dorse, Mace, spin the ball both ways. Obviously Felix with his offies is another option, and then batting just solid all the way through. I mean, Abbott scored a 50 batting at 9 or 10 this year, so I think we feel like we're in a pretty good place at the moment.
Again, Hampshire fans rejoice. Sounds very, very promising this season. And talking of the rest of this season then, Brad, before we get on to future aspirations and of course teammates to wrap up today's episode, what are your personal aspirations for the rest of the 2021 season? Because you look at Super September, that is absolutely mouthwatering with a capital M. You've got 6 top quality sides. Of course, our teams are going to go head to head at Edgbaston. What are your, I suppose, goals on both an individual and a team perspective heading into the rest of this season?
Well, obviously, I haven't looked into too much my own. Obviously, I want to do well and I'm going to play and take wickets and do well for the team, but I haven't set a number. I haven't said this is what I feel like I need to achieve. It's obviously tough because you've got, I said, Abbo's taken 40 odd wickets this year already with 5 or 6 games to go still. So, I mean, he's going to leave some for the rest of us, hopefully. But obviously we want to go to Division One and compete for that title, really. I think it's the best opportunity we've had in a good few years to do so. And I think we all understand and realise that. So, obviously, that September is going to be massive for the club and for all the clubs involved. And there's going to be some great cricket played. So everyone's just looking forward to that a lot. Obviously, we've got T20 quarterfinals coming up, the back end of the 100, I believe, against Notts. So that'll be a good game. And hopefully we can get to finals day and get the T20 trophy. I mean, if we can get competing in red ball and white ball, I think, again, the squad's in a very good position. So I'm just happy to be a part of it and doing my bit.
Fair enough, Brad. Fair enough. In fact, I can't go on to future aspirations. I cannot believe I didn't mention this in the podcast. That final game in the T20 Blast. I am shocked that I didn't mention that. Could you just talk people through? I called it the Great Escape, okay, because it was absolutely crazy. How Hampshire turned that around from being basically, I think, second bottom at one point of the South Group and then somehow snuck through. Can you just take us through what that final day was like from your perspective?
It was ridiculous, really. Obviously, we knew coming into that we had to get a win, and we had to do it. If we did win, we had to win big to get ahead of Surrey, I believe it was, on run rate. So it was the first time we played De Morgan this season. We only played them once in the T20, so we weren't really sure what to expect. But it was just insane. Obviously, I think they scored 180 odd or whatever it was in the first inning. So we thought, well, it's going to be a tough ask to go from here. But everyone just sort of put their hand up and said, right, well, we've got to go for it. And if we get bowled out, we get bowled out going for it because we just have to. I think it was 40 and overs we had to chase down the score to get ahead, sorry, on net run rate. And we just went for it, really. Obviously, Vincey came off, Darcy came off, Weathers was 40 or 13 balls or something ridiculous. And it was just one of those days, again, where everything sort of clicked for us. And it was just unbelievable to be a part of. I don't think I've been a part of a game that ridiculous ever, to be honest. Nice. It was sort of one of those that you don't really comprehend what's happened until a week later.
It's like that on the podcast as well. I'm going to be honest, because it was such a crazy, I mean, it was a crazy end to both. The North group as well, Josh Inglis with that century to take Warwickshire through. The Leicestershire opening batsman, that happened. And then that Hampshire game, I mean, it was at one point, it was a five-team shootout for those final two spots. Absolutely brilliant entertainment.
Obviously, it was pretty manic. The few games before then, we had a T20 doubleheader on the Friday night, I think, or the Friday. So we knew we had to win every game, basically, to have a chance. And just game after game, boys put in performances and we got over the line. So it was exciting a couple of weeks. Obviously, that was after the four-day game at Cheltenham where we managed to get a win there to get through into Div 1, which is obviously massive. And I think that sort of momentum just helped it because the squad was in a good spot, a good headspace, I guess.
100%. And it was a very, very memorable week for the Hawks in T20 cricket. And of course, Hampshire in Red Bull. And fingers crossed, Brad, that Hampshire can, you know, succeed in both Super September and, of course, the T20 Blast quarterfinals. They're not that far away. They are this month. I cannot wait for those. It's going to be absolutely sensational. And of course, a place at finals day at Fortress Edgbaston is on the line. So wishing Hampshire and of course the other teams, my team, the Birmingham Bears, the very, very best of luck heading into those games. But Brad, 2021 aside then, let's look just slightly further ahead into the future. Let's say the next 2-3 years. What are your aspirations in not just the county game, but cricket in general? For the foreseeable future, have you got your eyes on any milestones or goals per se, or very much just focused on, you know, bringing silverware back to the Aegeus Bowl?
Yeah, as I said, obviously, I just want to be a part of a winning team, which is where we are at the moment. Obviously, at Hampshire, just want to be at the start of the season. I've just said, well, I want to be a name that they're putting on the team sheet every week, and knowing that I'm going to go out there and put performances out. I think that was something that I wanted to do, and that was one of my biggest goals for the year, was to just get back playing consistent cricket and for them to back me and say, right, you go play cricket. We know you're going to do well. So I think done pretty well this year, but still, I said, a lot to put in. So again, I want to just be a part of the team, take as many wickets as I can, do what I can for the Hampshire team in all formats. So whether it be white ball, red ball, whatever. And we want to be competing for titles, really. I think that's why we're here. We're not here for the fun of it. Obviously, we do enjoy what we do, but we're here to compete and we want to win. So, yeah, definitely that. Scotland stuff coming up. There's obviously a T20 World Cup after the county season, which hopefully I'll be a part of, which would be an amazing experience, obviously, and something good for me taking forward. Just learning off, again, unbelievable players playing against international teams, like obviously the best of the best, and again, just showing people what you can do, putting yourself under pressure.
Well, I'll tell you what, Brad, on not just my behalf, but on behalf of all of us here at TCCP, wishing you nothing but the best of luck, mate, not just with Hampshire, not just in terms of you as an individual, but also with Scotland as well. As you said, that is a massive, massive tournament. I myself have some Scottish ancestry, so I do have a little bit of a connection with the boys in blue. Or the boys in pink, as they were in 2016, funnily enough. But yeah, decent squad. The likes of Berrington, Muncie, Kurtz. I mean, there are some fantastic bowlers. Safian Sharif as well in there. Mark Water used to play for Lancashire here in the county circuit as well. Wishing Scotland the very, very best of luck in that T20 World Cup. And of course, England as well. Should be a fantastic, fantastic tournament. But Brad, My pleasure, Brad. But before we end today's episode, we do, of course, have TCCP teammates. So just for the listeners out there who are maybe new to TCCP and don't know how this segment works, basically in front of me here, I've got 10 questions or so to ask Brad Wheel about his teammates that he shares a dressing room with down at the Aegeus Bowl. So, Brad, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
I think so. I'm going to throw some names under the bus here by the sounds of it, but sure.
You sure are, yeah. That is how it usually works. But then again, answer them as you see fit, Brad. So first question, I mean, this is a very, very strong one to kickstart with. Who's the teacher's pet down in Hampshire? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Well, he's new to the team, but I'm going to say Nick Gubbins. He seems to obviously be putting in a good shift with the coaches, trying to impress at the moment.
Nick Gubbins, hey, fair enough. It's paying off, though, isn't it? He scored 131 out the other day. Yeah. Oh, what a cricketer. I love Nick Gubbins. Absolutely class. I will miss him at Middlesex, I'm going to be honest, but no, he's been a very, very shrewd piece of business from the Southern County. Brad, this next one's going to be interesting. There may be a few candidates at Hampshire. Who's Mr. Sure. Hard as Nails in the dressing room?
Oh, good one. Well, to be honest, the last season, I think Colin de Grandhom, he's just hard Zimbabwean New Zealander, I guess you could call him. Just hard as nails. A great man. Obviously an unbelievable cricketer, but he's hard as nails.
I can definitely get on board with that. CDG, Colin de Grandhom. Colin.
He's got the best mullet too.
Oh, he's iconic, isn't he? He is like his surname is literally Big Man.
Yeah.
Oh, what a player. Oh, hopefully, I would love to see him at finals day. That's all I'm going to say. But we'll have to wait and see, won't we, with regards to Big Colin. Good choice though, Brad. I can definitely agree with that one. Moving on to our next one, the first of our musically themed ones here on TCCP. Who's the dressing room DJ at Hampshire and what are their choices of tunes?
Yeah, bit of a laugh, actually. Carl Abbott would be our dressing room DJ, but he's got, I think, a rotation of about 5 or 6 songs that he just keeps playing on repeat. So there's a bit of Johnny Clegg, some old South African stuff. I think he loves Imagine Dragons and maybe a Coldplay song in there. So it's a bit of a random mix, but that's what gets us through all 6 songs on repeat.
I was not expecting that with Carl Abbott. I'm going to be honest. So you're telling me that basically in a dressing room, Carl Abbott could be there listening to Imagine Dragons or Coldplay and then go Correct. And take 10 wickets?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, my God. That is fantastic. That's something I've learned today on the podcast. Oh, this next one, Brad, this is an interesting one because we've had a few different answers to this one beforehand, including a very, very funny one courtesy of Ian Holland. Who's the karaoke king down in Hampshire and what is their go-to choice of song?
Probably the physio, James Clegg. I mean, it's been a while since anyone's done much karaoke, to be honest. But I think he rates himself quite highly with karaoke. He's not shy of it and not shy of letting everyone know. So I haven't actually seen it in person myself. But yeah, be James Clegg, I think.
He was Ian Holland's shout as well.
Yeah, I think it'd be a crowd favourite, that one, I think.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely a theme with regards to Hampshire's physio, James. I mean, a certain South Park song, we won't repeat it, but apparently there was quite a legendary performance of that at a certain karaoke bar a few years ago, but fair play. Obviously a very, very popular figure down in Hampshire. Brad, moving on to our next one, a very much cricket-orientated question, this one. Who's the most likely to get timed out in the Hampshire dressing room?
Oh, good one. Well, Mason Crane nearly got timed out. It was T20 a couple of weeks ago. He was in next. The wicket had fallen and he didn't have any pads on. He was standing up in the change room. And I'm sure you know the GS bowl. It's obviously quite a long way down from the change room downstairs onto the field. So we were just chucking clothes at him. He was trying to get ready while on his way out. But I think obviously T20s, as a tail ender, you're hoping not to bat really. So it was a bit of a panic, but good fun.
Hey, fair play. I can see that with your GS bowl. It is a little bit of a trek, isn't it? Down from the dressing room, you know, out into the middle. God, it is every tail ender's nightmare, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what Nam is made of, really.
100%. Yeah. You wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy, but yeah. To be fair, I'm not sure if I've ever actually seen it happen. Have you seen it happen before, Brad? Someone get timed out?
No, I haven't.
Neither have I. We'll have to wait and see. Hopefully it doesn't. But yeah, who knows? Cricket's a very, very funny game, isn't it? We can never know what's going to happen. Moving on to our next one, Brad. And you mentioned beforehand about throwing someone under the bus. For this one, you will have to throw at least one person. Who are the best and worst dressed down in Hampshire?
Worst, I'll start with best dressed, rather. Maybe Joe Weatherly. Obviously, he rates himself quite highly. Loves to dress up. I think that's just a standard. Worst dress, maybe Ian Holland. You mentioned you had him on the throw him under the bus, my housemate. but he's just an American Aussie, maybe a bit confused with the stress sense sometimes, doesn't know where he's coming or going. That's all I'll say, I guess.
To be fair, we've had both of them on the podcast. Joe does, he looks incredibly sharp. He always has I don't know how he does it. He always looks like very prim and proper, doesn't he, in terms of the way in which he dresses, the appearance as well. The hair's always pristine.
That's his best to do that, I think.
Yeah, hey, pays off though. you got to respect the effort, I suppose, of Joe Weatherly. There is one question about this actually, Brad, and it is with regards to your style and Carl Abbott's. What are the South Africans like in the dressing room? Because on the podcast, we've heard quite a few things about South African dress sense. What are your thoughts on it?
I'd like to think mine's okay, but maybe I'm blind to it. Abbo, not the best dress sense. I remember he rocked up. We played golf a couple of weeks ago. Didn't have a pair of shorts. Went into the pro shop and bought a pair of bright turquoise shorts with socks halfway up his shins. And it was just a disgrace. So, I mean, I'd hope I'm not on that level. But there is definitely some dodgy dress sense going on from the Saffas, I think.
We get that quite often. I don't know why. Is that just a South African thing?
I think so. I don't think they care as much about what they wear, to be honest.
That's fair play. Maybe I might have some South African jeans in me then, because my dress sense is absolutely non-existent. It is absolutely appalling. Moving on to our next question then, Brad. Very much cricket orientated again, this one. Who's the biggest cricket badger down in Hampshire?
Oh, there's a few. Again, throw Nick Gubbins on the bus. I only know him a couple of weeks, but he's the one. He's shadow batting in the lunch line on the golf course. He's shadow batting with his golf clubs. Just a badger, loves it. I'd also put Mason in there, undercover badger. Just loves cricket, loves every bit about it. I remember him pulling out a spreadsheet of all his school and club wickets he'd taken until he was about 20 years old. He was recording them, letting everyone know. But just a proper badger, yeah. Undercover badger.
Crikey, that is dedication. To record every single one of them. Oh, that's not undercover. That is out and out badger.
Yeah, that is true.
My goodness. Goodness. I mean, we've heard his name beforehand, more so because he knows everyone's numbers in county cricket. That was his party trick. Yeah.
Bit of a trick.
Yeah, it is. Hey, fair play to him, though. I mean, whatever keeps you entertained, and there's nothing wrong with being a cricket badger, folks. There really isn't. I mean, I myself would definitely class myself as one. Moving on to our next one then, Brad. Who's the dressing room joker down in Hampshire? Who's always pulling a practical joke?
I don't know if I'd call him a joker, but Ian Holland, again, throw him under the bus, but just probably the worst sense of humour ever. There's just dad jokes after dad jokes. He just can't help himself. But yeah, everyone sort of jumps on his back and he loves it. He loves the attention, I think. but always, I mean, the overseas are coming always a bit tentative and not really sure what to make of him. And then he just busts out the dad jokes nonstop. So probably him, yeah.
Fair play. He's a lovely fella, Ian. I must admit, he's been one of our favourite guests on the podcast. Really, really nice. Heart of gold. And yeah, winner of, what was it, Cricket Superstar as well.
Cricket Superstar. We let him know about it too.
I'd hope you do, yeah. It's quite a prestigious title, isn't it?
Absolutely.
100%. Or moving on to our next one, bringing back a classic here on CCCP, Brad. I'm not sure whether or not you would have played a lot of this recently, given COVID and, of course, the fact that quite a few England players have got injured playing this sport. But who's the best footballer down on the South Coast?
Probably James Vince or Keith Barker. Barks obviously played professional football, I think, before he played cricket. So he's a gun. Just doesn't move as well as he used to. And Vincey, obviously, just a very good footballer. He's just a talented sportsman. I think he still rates himself. And he thinks he could go play for QPR. I think he wants to slot in there when he's done.
Brilliant. Again, two names that have cropped up quite frequently, actually, on the podcast. I suppose if you had to choose one, though, Brad, let's say if it was to, I was going to say win England the World Cup. I don't think they're going to get to Three Lions, but let's say it was for QPR then. The winning goal for QPR to send them up to the Premier League, who would you rather put your money on, James Vince or Keith Hubert Douglas Barker?
I'd probably say Barks, to be honest. He's just solid, isn't he?
Mm.
You know what you're going to get. Consistent, reliable, good footballer.
Yeah, fair enough.
Barks, yeah.
I miss Keith. I really do miss Keith. I'm glad that you lot are keeping, you know, good tabs with him at Hampshire, because I really do miss him in a Warwickshire shirt. Guy was a cult hero in the Midlands.
He's an unbelievable cricketer in all sense.
Oh, absolutely. Keith, if you're listening, We still love you, mate. We still love you. Always welcome back here at the Fortress. Hope you know that. Moving on to our final question then, Brad. Again, a little bit rogue this one, but it's a nice one to wrap up on. Who would you say is the most likely to win I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here in the Hampshire dressing room?
Oh, it's quite a tough one, to be honest. I'm trying to think, going around the change room. Chris Wood, maybe.
Ooh, that's a shout.
Bit of a shout. But he just manages to get stuff done. I mean, he's played through injuries. He can get through tough challenges. I think he can keep himself and other people entertained when there's not much going on around the camp. I think he'd be very good value. Probably, yeah, Woody.
I like that shout. I genuinely do like that shout. That's a decent shout, Chris Wood. Yeah, I think the public would probably get behind him. And I'll say it's the last question. It is a two-parter, kind of, to be honest, Brad. Who would you say wouldn't last a day in the jungle?
There'd be a few. There'd be quite a few lads I think would be out there in a day. Who would I say? Maybe Scott Curry, young seamer. Yeah, he doesn't really do that sort of stuff. He'd be very happy sitting at home on the sofa with a cup of tea, maybe watching it in Italy.
To be fair, aren't we all like that, though? We all say, yeah, like, we'd go in there and smash it and this, that, the other, but as soon as you're in there, it's completely different, isn't it?
Easy to say, sat behind the screen, isn't it?
Exactly. Well, it's like me with cricket. It's like watching someone smash Rashid Khan for four and saying, yeah, I could do that down the local village green. I couldn't. but I'd like to think that I could from...
We all still have to think that.
Yeah, exactly. From the comfort of your own home, you think you can do everything until you're actually out in the middle. It's quite nice, really. But what about yourself, Brad? Do you reckon you would be able to hack it in the Australian jungle?
Okay. You know, obviously, South African background, I feel like I'd be tough and be able to get through the challenges. Probably just get bored, to be honest, with all the downtime in between on the camp. I think I'd do okay. I wouldn't put myself up the top there, but I'd do all right. Maybe middle of the pack.
Hey, fair enough. You know, they have a luxury item. Would yours be a cricket bat and ball?
No, definitely not. Mine would be maybe just a good pillow to sleep on. I think that's key.
That's a shout, I suppose, in the night. But then again, in the day, what are you going to do to keep yourself entertained?
It's true.
We'd have to find out, wouldn't we? ITV, if you're listening, Brad Wheel, get your representatives in touch. That's all I'll say. Would be definite good value. Would indeed, Brad. But that does pretty much bring us to an end, not only to today's teammate segment, but to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast as a whole. So, Brad, before I let you go, do you just have any final words, anything to wrap up on, any social media channels to promote, for example?
Not much to promote. Obviously, you've got my own social media, but not on it that much, to be honest. But just thank you for having me. Obviously, it was good to chat. Good to chat over that stuff, and I've really enjoyed it so far.
Well, that is fantastic, Brad. Very, very happy to hear that. And of course, wishing you nothing but the best of luck heading into the rest of the 2021 county season and beyond. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.